Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's Weekly Yap podcast, episode 11. Holy cow, last week was crazy. We had Timbo Gracchus last week, and then a special Rack Friday podcast with Leon Ligothetis. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, please go back and listen to Leon's podcast. He is the one, he has traveled the world a few times via motorcycle. He's walked, and he's done it all on the act of strangers, the kindness of strangers. And so he left a successful stockbroking career in London a few years ago to give it up to find a meaningful life, and now he just travels the world relying on the kindness of strangers, but then in turn giving them great sort of gifts in return, whether it's money and just helping so many amazing people, and such amazing inspiration and insights from Leon. So make sure you check out, that was the podcast from last Friday, kind of a special treat because it was Rack Friday. You guys have heard me talking about Rack Friday for really pretty much all of November, and so the lead up to that. And just want to express my gratitude for just having an amazing day. I had my sister and two of her kids were down for Rack Friday, plus my wife and our kids, and we just spent the day. We had a blast. We did a cleanup at the beach. We went to the dollar store and distributed dollars all around the store. We taped dollars around so that people would find them and have dollars. We went around and gave flowers to strangers. We were at the coffee shop. We bought coffee for people. I surprised a woman by buying her breakfast. We went to the laundromat and put quarters in all of the machines and gave a gift to a worker and gave a gift to another woman who was there with her kids. We went to lunch and gave a gift to the lunch people at our favorite spot. We went to Redbox machines and taped microwave popcorn to all the machines. We went and bought gift cards and gave away gift cards to some homeless people that we found. I think when it was all said and done, we did, 123 random acts of kindness combined. And so just cherishing how much fun we had with that. And if you took part in random acts of kindness, go to our Facebook page, which is Rack Friday 2014, and share what you did. We're still gathering the tally. We've had over 500 racks posted, and so we're still continuing to gather those and count those. But just an awesome, awesome day, and just so grateful for that. So, but December is upon us. December is here, which means it's the most wonderful time of the year. But it's not. It's not for a lot of people. December and the holidays can actually be the most difficult time of the year. And there's so much emotion, and there's so much story, and there's so much baggage that goes with the holidays. And so it's good in so many ways, but very, very difficult in so many others. And so when I was thinking about someone that I could have on to really kind of kickstart December in the right kind of way, it just so happens, of course, the way the universe works, how the right person is put right in front of you when you need them. That's what living yes and is all about, right? Embracing the moment, embracing what is happening around you and going, you know what, this is perfect. This is exactly what I need right now. And Jay Fields is exactly who I needed for this podcast today. So the nitty-gritty is that Jay is a transformational educator, and I know a lot of you guys are going to say, what's a transformational educator? I'll let her explain what that means. She's been a yoga teacher for a long time. She's written two books, Teaching People Not Poses, as well as Home in Your Body, which I just love, which is kind of the overall theme with what our conversation is about today for our podcast interview, and what I think is really, really important for the holidays. And Jay is going to talk about what that really means, and especially during the holidays, and there's so much judgment and self-judgment, that idea of loving yourself and being at home in your body loving yourself during the holidays, through the holidays. Jay is fantastic. She does trainings all over the world. She's on the faculty for the Awakened Heart Embodied Mind Training in Santa Monica, California. And she is the dear, dear friend of a friend of mine out in Ojai, California, where she lives now. And we got sort of connected in a serendipitous way. And Jay just recently bought a motorcycle, which I read her newsletter, and it was all about saying yes to this scary new thing, which she felt impelled to do, even though it terrified her. And it was all about saying yes. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got to interview Jay. And she was gracious enough to take time. And I think this is just a really, really precious conversation. I know I got a lot out of it, and I think you will too. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Jay Fields on the Weekly Yap.
Well, welcome everyone to the Weekly Yap podcast. On the phone I have with me, all the way from Ojai, California, is Jay Fields. Now, Jay, your bio is super interesting as I look at your bio, and I've been all over your sites. And for those of you listening, Jay's website is beautiful. It's jay-fields.com. And it's so simple. It's so beautiful. But you know what? I'm a pretty simple guy, Jay. And when some people read your bio, they're going to go, okay, what is a transformational educator? And what is embodied integrity? So I know that it can be brutal at times when people introduce you or when you try to introduce yourself. So I'm going to give you the opportunity right now. So Jay, tell us
who you... Why don't you just start with the hardest question?
This is your you've got your 30 seconds, Jay. You've got your 30 seconds. Tell us who you are. What's most important to you right now as you kind of share with people, you know, who you are and what you're about?
Yeah, so the thing that's most important to me, probably now as well as for a long time, although I don't know that I would have articulated it this way, is this venture of trying to get out of my head and into my body and live from that place. I tend to be a very cerebral person and overly analytical, and definitely comes from a family system in which that was, you know, that was the safe way to be instead of being the emotional sensitive one, which I was, you know. And so I feel like for most of my adult life, a lot of what I've been doing is going back and trying to reclaim what's true for me and finding that through my felt senses and my embodied awareness as opposed to the stories I have about myself. And so then that has naturally transformed into doing that with other people, because it's the thing that gets me up in the morning, you know, whether it's for me or with others. It's the thing that I'm most fascinated by, because when we live our life from not from the stories and not from our head, it's a totally different adventure.
Right. And so, looking at your journey a little bit. Well, actually, you know what? Speaking of journey, let's get into it. And since we're on the podcast and people are listening, like the connection for you and I, and how we even kind of came across one another is, we didn't even know it at the time, but we have a mutual friend in Ojai, which to me is like family, and I know who's a great friend to you. So hello, Whitney. But a couple of weeks ago, if not a month ago, I'm going through my email, and I've got this great newsletter sent to me of this person that I've never heard of. And I'm like, okay, why do I have this? And I'm reading through this newsletter, and it's about this motorcycle experience and about having to say yes to this really scary sort of idea. And I'm reading through and I'm fascinated, and, you know, spoiler alert for everyone out there, this is Jay's newsletter. So Jay, I feel like that's kind of the thing that sort of brought us together. And so, obviously, you know a little bit about me and sort of what Yes And is all about, but please share with our listeners sort of what this whole new motorcycle adventure meant to you and what it was all about.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think I'm still working that through because it is so new. But what I had said in this newsletter that that you're talking about, Travis, is I had talked about how I had wanted to ride a motorcycle, learn how to ride a motorcycle for like 10 years. And I'd been on the back of different boyfriends' motorcycles and always loved it and always thought, I want to do that. And there was like a million reasons not to, you know, including at the time I was living in Portland where it rains most of the year. And I'd be like, why would I do that here? But also all the things of like, what, you know, this is a silly thing to spend money on. That's a lot of money to put into something that's just frivolous. And what's my mom's going to, you know, she's going to kick my ass. She's a retired ER nurse who pulled gravel out of enough people's bodies to tell me, you know, please don't do this to me. You know, that's the kind of, so there was like all these reasons not to. And there was just this gut feeling every time I got on that like, yes, this is for me, and it's for me in a way that I can't even say yet, because I could feel that it was one of those things for me that was going to draw out the next iteration of myself. You know, like 20 years ago, it was rock climbing and yoga and really finding myself through these different avenues that were so new and so novel. And this was the latest one, and it just happened to also be the most terrifying.
Yes.
But I've what I was writing about was just how humbled I've been of around what I've learned about myself through not just riding, but actually like purchasing a motorcycle and what happened. I didn't say this, I don't think, in the newsletter, but the first day that I bought this new expensive beautiful dream bike of mine, I dropped it and broke the clutch lever off, and you can't turn a motorcycle on if the clutch lever doesn't work.
Oh,
and I was standing
goodness,
in my driveway looking at it going, oh my God, and I just kind of walked inside and pretended it didn't happen, you know? So it's just been such an interesting confrontation of what's true for me, and I think that's where it links back to my work and what I was just talking about earlier about what I'm passionate about. I love doing things that are experientially based to create novel sensation or to create novel awareness, because I feel like it's those moments where you get caught off guard. Where I get caught off guard, that I'm most likely to see myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that idea of getting out, you sort of getting outside of your comfort zone into kind of a vulnerable space.
Yeah. Yeah, and vulnerable in part because it's, at least in this instance, it's something that I said a deep yes to, right? So somewhere in me, there is a resonance, there's an alignment, and I don't really cognitively know it yet. So I think it's like, for me, that idea of yes, and has so much to do with a dance with the mystery.
Yes. Sort of the embracing the unknown, but feeling the sense that this, I have to do this. I don't necessarily know why I have to do this, but I have to do this.
Yeah, like there's deep certainty and deep mystery at the same juncture.
Yeah, and I think that's what really I think stood out to me as I was reading it, because so much of it I really connected with the wrestling with the fear. And like you said, you were that kind of terrified at the same time. And I think that really connected with me. And that idea of knowing that you're supposed to be doing something, even though it terrifies you at the same time. And I know, you know, talking about purpose, I know there's so much around people and a sense of purpose and, you know, wanting to do something, but there's so much fear wrapped around it. And what I loved about your yes, about that you know, that saying yes to it, it was like kind of like, yeah, I'm terrified, but I need to do this.
Right. Yeah, and it's interesting as I hear you reflect that back to me, what I'm reminded of, that I don't know that I necessarily said clearly in that piece of writing, was that It was the thing that was so fascinating to me was that it was intense fear meeting with intense joy. And joy, like what I kept saying to my friends was, I don't know that I can say that I've ever done something so big and expensive and risky in the name of just pure joy. Like, there's no other reason for me to ride a motorcycle.
Yeah.
There's nothing practical about it. And I look back at the work that I've chosen to do, you know, as you're talking about purpose and how all along in my career as a self-employed person, following this nebulous purpose thing, you know, that so much of it has been fear-related, but I haven't really looked at the fact that so much of it was also joy-related. You know, that comes from a place of, I sense that that's going to bring me great joy. And I think we do a lot of talking about the fear or the unknowingness of it, and at least for me, I hadn't really until the motorcycle experience stopped to take to really appreciate the things that I've said yes to that were purposeful and scary also happened to be exceptionally joyful.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, you know, that fear and joy can be sort of, you know, two sides of the same coin. You know, it's and it's funny. I'll be the first to admit it. I feel like I'm a big wuss when it comes to doing a lot of things. Improvisation is probably the only thing that someone would look at me and go, like, wait, how do you get up in front of a group of people and do that? Isn't that terrifying? And outside of that, you know, I might as well be wrapped in, you know, in cellophane and pillows when it comes to, you know, getting outside my comfort zone. But I can relate to it from that standpoint. There's a very real fear every time I step on stage. But the flip side of that is there's no really greater joy that I feel. That's not relationship connected really than sort of stepping out on that edge, mm-hmm. that there is so much fear, but it's a part of that fear is the exuberance of walking that line and being able to sort of step into that unknown and experience that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, as you said, the flip side of the same coin, it feels to me like, and I don't know if this is just something I'm trying on right now, but like this idea that one contains the other, like there's actually a containment of fear with joy and of joy with fear. That they, like you said, they almost make each other possible somehow.
Right. Well, yeah, and it's funny, you know, getting to work with kids on a daily basis, especially with sports and working on performance with different athletes and performers and things like that, there's that sense of, you know, and I talk to my kids about this all the time, you know, whether they're nervous before a soccer match or there's a little, you know, one of my sons is starting to do improv now and he gets nervous before a class. And I, you know, it's actually celebrating, you know, celebrating the fear, you know, it's like, you know, when you've got those nerves, it's like, isn't that awesome? Isn't that
right.
awesome that you're nervous? That means you care.
Yeah,
you know, we don't tend to get, you know, sort of afraid of things that we don't care about. And so isn't that cool
right.
that we can celebrate the fact that, oh, wow, if you're nervous, this is something that must really be important to you.
Right. Right.
And so now, since you have sort of taken on this new journey that you really didn't anticipate, what are some things that have showed up for you? What are some things that you're learning along the way?
gosh. Well, one is that I was not very good at having fun in my life. Which is funny because I think of myself as being a really playful, easygoing person, and that's different than having fun. And usually I would rely upon other people to get that. And to be able to say, like, I'm going to work really, really hard, and then I'm going to play really, really hard. I think I've reconnected with something I had when I was in college, you know, where I was super physically active or just doing lots of new things and also going super deep into my studies, you know. So I've reconnected with, I think, something that is actually more intrinsically me and feels more balanced, having more fun.
Yeah,
and the other piece is just really, so I've told a couple of friends, part of my story and my biography is that I've taught yoga for forever, and like 17 years I've taught yoga, and it's been so profoundly formative of who I am and how I relate to the world. And I've said to some friends that riding a motorcycle is like yoga on crack. Like you have to, like, all this play on your mat around being present and aware and alert, like, it actually means something when you're on a bike. And but the other piece that is similar for me is that one of the things that I developed out of my yoga practice was a real keen intuitive capacity, which is actually scientifically backed. Like, in neuroscience shows that the more embodiment you have, the more access you have to your own intuition. And so yoga was hugely helpful for me in developing my own ability to know what's true for me, and to make choices that serve me. And when it comes to the bike, I've noticed a whole different level of that. Like, I'm like, you know, if the bike is yoga on crack, or like the graduate level yoga, right? Because now when I go out to get on my bike, it is actually my life. You know, it's actually life and death. And,
right.
And I can feel in my body the days where it's just, it's a no. And I don't have to know why. And I just have to respect it. And then I go back inside and I do something else. And, or, you know, I'm on a road and I'm deciding to go left instead of right. And it's this powerful knowing to go right instead of left. And it's just, it's an interesting and much more, I don't know, it feels more participatory, that level of knowing when it comes to riding, than it did for me when it came to yoga.
Right. That's interesting. I don't think I've ever thought of it that way, as far as the mindfulness aspect of, and actually, you know, that, and maybe that's part of the fear when I think about myself, as far as, you know, the whole desire to ride a motorcycle, I haven't had, like a lot of people have. And I think part of it, that fear to me is, I'm not sure if I trust myself. I'm not sure if I trust myself to be that fully, you know, alert and locked in, because it is, you know, it is what, you know, not to over, you know, dramatize, but it feels like it's your life, that you don't have time to make a grocery list when you're, you know, going down the road. So that's interesting. But for you, to see it kind of as an extension of, especially coming out of your yoga practice into almost sort of living it in a very much more intense way.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe it's a function of the fact that I got dulled in my practice, that I needed something more, maybe not. I don't know. There's a part of me that wants to judge that. And then there's another part of me that wants to see it as really beautiful. And what you just said of, like, of seeing where it really is a whole new level of trust in myself.
And now, I was going to say, if you could compare that to your experience doing rock climbing as well, which to me, I would also say, feels like, again, from a mindfulness and presence standpoint, to having to be so sort of present as you're climbing, is there a close connection for you, or is there a different feeling, one from the other?
Good question. Yeah, because I always called climbing vertical yoga. It's the same. Same kind of thing. You know, it does feel different, in part because, at least the type of climbing I did, I didn't boulder. I was doing lead climbing where you have a partner.
Yeah.
So there's still that sense of I'm relying on someone else. I'm relying on my ability to get up this rock, but I couldn't do it without this other person.
Sure.
And that piece is different in that it really is me out there. And there's, even if I'm riding with someone else, I have to ride my own ride. We're not connected, you know.
Right.
And I think the other piece too is it actually, at least for me, is it's the fun factor again. Like climbing is fun for me in the sense of like it's like a body puzzle, you know. Like how can I make this move work? And it is kind of cerebral as applied to how can my body do this. But with riding for me, it just is actually like the amount of times that I am either giggling and or hooting and hollering in my helmet just because I can't stop, that kind of thing never happened when I was climbing, you know,
yeah,
just to like,
right,
yeehaw,
right.
This is awesome, you know.
Oh, that's great. It's so fascinating. I've just never thought of the experience of writing really from that standpoint, especially from the mindfulness standpoint. I mean, the pure joy and adrenaline, I think most people probably go, okay, I get that. I don't know. I almost feel like if there's some motorcycle companies out there listening, you know, you just articulated, I think, a whole new market for them.
Right.
But so interesting, very interesting. Now to connect this back into your work a little bit. Now you've written two books, Teaching People, Not Poses, mm-hmm. and Homing Your Body, which I will say I have not read yet. I will be reading because my wife is definitely the yogi in the family. And yes. And I enjoy it. I just haven't really built a discipline routine around it. And that would be my own, I guess, laziness, resistance. I'm sure I could dig into that a little bit. But it's funny. One of the ideas that I can't remember the book, but one of the expressions that I've really loved from yoga is that idea of stay on your own mat. And when you were talking about, you know, riding and even if you're riding with someone, you're in charge of that, but you're in charge of your own bike and and then when you're on your mat, not comparing yourself to others, and just really kind of, yeah, staying on your own mat, keeping your own experience. Now for you, and connecting this back sort of to your work, what is it? You know, what is it about your work that really just sort of inspires you and excites you as you work with different people?
Yeah. Well, let me just say what I do first, and that is mostly right now. Most of my work is one-on-one coaching individuals and helping them to find more embodied self-awareness. But more, I mean, if I was going to say it in a more practical way, I would say what I really do is help people fall in love with themselves and have their own back.
Mm.
And it's interesting because when I was making this most recent website, I was asking all my clients, like, well, what are we doing? You know, like, what do you say to your friends when you talk to them about what we do? And because, as you know, it's the hardest thing to do is talk about what you do because you just do it and you don't really
right.
think about it
right.
so much. And that was the thing that people over and over and over kept saying to me is like, well, you helped me fall in love with myself. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I do? Like, really? And
yeah.
I would say, like, I don't think I saw it because that was the part of the work that I was doing for myself too. If that makes sense, like the more the types of things I do with my clients all come from my own journey of really having fallen in love with myself and being able to be myself. And so all that to come back around to answer your question is the thing that I love about what I do is getting to be present while people settle into their own skin, you know?
Yeah,
And just get to, like that, you know, where
the right.
sense of they come into focus with themselves.
Yes.
And on the days when I'm really there myself, it just feels like, yeah, you know, good on you. Good to see you here, you know? And on the days when I'm really out of focus with myself and working with people and getting to see them do it, it's like, oh, yeah, there is. This does happen. It does exist. I can get there. And it,
right,
it's
just, right.
I don't, you know, it's the world I want to live in, I guess is the easiest way to say it. I want to, and I think you and I share that, like we want to live in a world where people are themselves.
And right, right.
Living it.
And so, A, could you get a bigger compliment than someone saying that, you know, your work allows me to fall in love with myself.
Right.
And you're like, oh, wow, that you've picked a good profession if that's what people are saying about you. Now, but I'm really curious from your own, you know, background and perspective and as you worked with people, and it's so interesting, the difficulty for people to feel at home in their body, to feel, you know, whether the word is authentic, or just to feel safe, or just to feel, you know, purposeful. Mm-hmm. As you've worked with people, is there one or two ideas? What do you see as you work with people that sort of is the biggest obstacle that really prevents us from really just sort of exhaling and being okay with ourselves.
Yeah. I think absolutely the biggest obstacle is feelings that we don't want to feel. You know, the beauty of showing up in your body is that you feel, and the challenge of showing up in your body is you feel. You know, and to live in our heads and to be constantly moving and busy is a great distraction from what's really going on the surface. And so I think, you know, it's the obstacles are, whether we know it or not, there are feelings underneath the surface that we haven't wanted to feel. And to come back into ourselves means reckoning with them.
Yeah.
We can't ignore them any longer. And often, as was the case in my life, when I started to feel what I was feeling underneath the surface, I had spent so many years trying to not feel it that I had created a life that was not mine. You know, it was like a couple degrees off from the trajectory that would have been mine. And so to get it back to mine meant adding even more to those feelings that I didn't want to feel. So it's not just that they're already there, it's that there's also the sense that if you looked at them, you would have to actually turn the volume up on them and create more of that feeling before you could get true again.
Yes, yes. And so is that sense of that, you know, I feel like there's so much shame and guilt over a lot of the thoughts and feelings that people, myself, carry around. And it's almost like we feel bad that we have these feelings or these thoughts, and so we try to repress them, and then we beat ourselves up because there must be something wrong with me if I'm feeling these things or having these thoughts.
Right, exactly. And I'd say that's the piece that resistance that comes through as judgment is one of another huge obstacle, is that most people, myself included, and most of the people I work with, do, as you say, beat ourselves up for how we feel. And what I've found is that judgment is just another form of resisting feeling what you feel. So
yeah.
I could, for example, say, like, you're so stupid for having not finished college, even though that's not true, whatever that is. You know, like, you're so stupid for
right,
having done
right.
this. And that is one way from my brain to try and get me to do something different, to act better so that doesn't ever happen again, when really what I could do is just drop into, gosh, I feel so sad that I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, to feel sad
yeah.
is so different than saying, you stupid idiot. And yet,
yeah.
we do the you stupid idiot like 90 times more than we do the, gosh, I'm just really sad.
So instead of clicking into judgment, which is what we do really easily, just allow yourself to feel it. Just
mm-hmm.
go ahead and feel it. I'm reading through your blogs, and the one that really stuck out to me, which I really love, which is don't fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I scrolled down on it, and it's exactly what you're talking about. Your advice, these are your words. If you're hurting, just hurt. If you're longing for something, long with everything you have. If you're scared, sit in the black well of your own fear. If you're angry, drop the hardness of righteousness and just feel the power of your own anger. If you feel joy, let it spill over. And then you go on. But I feel like that idea is we're so conditioned, or we're so raised to resist feelings that, and then we bottle them up, and they just obviously they come out in the wrong ways. But yeah, I love that. I love that. And so as you're working with people, it's you're giving people the safety and the trust to just allow themselves to feel it and be it and just feel not judged.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was reading a book earlier this week that put to words what I've experienced, and I was like, oh, that's so awesome. It was the book was Bessel van der Kolk's book called The Body Keeps the Score, and he was talking about how the watchtower of the brain, the medial prefrontal cortex, that's the only part
mm-hmm.
of our brain that has the ability to feel our emotional brain. And that when we can feel our emotional brain, it's like making ourselves real to ourselves. And I love that
yeah.
until I know how I really feel, I'm not real to myself. And I think that's how most of us move through the world. Like, you know, we move through the world from our autobiographical self, where we can talk about who we are and we can put into narrative where we've come from and where we want to go. But that narrative is mostly for public consumption. And so it's easy for it to start to take on a life of its own. But the moment-to-moment awareness of what I'm feeling deep inside in any given situation, that's what makes me real. And I love
right.
that idea of becoming real by giving yourself permission to feel. And it's so
right.
simple, and
right.
it's so freaking hard.
Right. And then, yeah, to allow yourself to feel and then not just jump in right away, too, with the judgment of it.
It's so risky, it's so risky to start to feel what you feel and actually do it means that you become yourself in a way that might not fit into the world you have created for yourself.
Right, right.
That's such a huge risk. I mean, yeah.
Well, yeah, how scary that is. How scary it is to feel like you have to walk into a direction that is new and unfamiliar and outside of your comfort zone, if that is truly how you feel.
Right. Yeah.
Compared to staying put. Yeah.
But the hopeful side of things is that moment to moment awareness and building that, not only is it in the brain allowing you to see your emotions in a way that's conscious, but it's also at the same time strengthening the parts of the brain that self-regulate, that help you to feel your own presence, that help you to feel that self-love that my clients talked about. Like, so it's kind of this again, a yes and, or like a catch 22 in the sense of, like, if you're going to feel your feelings, it's going to be hard. But the cool thing is, while you're feeling your feelings, you're strengthening the part of you that can do it. And
right.
That is cool. That's another piece that I would say I get super jazzed about in my work, is I watch it happen for people. You know, I watch them move towards the thing that scared them or the things that they've been resisting, if it's sadness or fear or whatever, or anger. I watch them move towards it and become stronger.
Right.
Like, strong enough that they can be vulnerable, right? Because that's
mm-hmm.
the piece.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's, yeah, that truest, you know, the truest expression of confidence is that ability to be vulnerable. And to face those fears and to actually walk in the direction of the things that scare us. So I have to say, I'm being conscious of your time here, because we're really kind of moving into the, you know, the thick of the holiday season here, which for a lot of people really isn't the most wonderful time of the year.
Right.
as the song would have it. So what's a nugget or advice that you have? Because it seems like it's the time of the year that doesn't necessarily invite authenticity.
Right.
So what advice do you have for people as they just try to navigate, you know, the holiday season?
Good question. Because that is where that Fake It Till You Make It blog came from originally.
Okay.
I wrote it 3 years ago, the week of Thanksgiving, because I had just broken up and been in an awful, you know, heartbreak situation and was thinking, oh my gosh, I have to go be thankful. Yeah, right.
Right.
You know,
right.
Last
right.
I'm feeling right now. I feel like I want to go destroy something. And so the first thing I would say is, just to the best of your ability, take moments to step back to yourself and just say, what's true for me right now? Like, this might be what's happening with my family, this might be what they expect of me, this might be how I have always done it in the past, but actually right now, if I take a deep breath in my body, what do I feel? And you don't even have to do anything about it. You don't have to speak differently to anyone in your family. You don't have to act differently. But I've found for myself and for the people I work with, just asking yourself, how are you? Like, you really meant it, you know? And looking to see, gosh, actually, I'm sad. Or, you know, gosh, actually, I want to rip that person's head off. Right? Like, just acknowledge that it's there. And oftentimes that's enough to bring you back to that self-regulated point again, where you can handle whatever it is, the situation that you're in.
Yeah.
So it's that turning toward yourself and, like, how are you?
Yeah.
What's true?
And if you need to step away for 5 minutes, step away for 5 minutes. If you need to go for a drive, go for a drive.
Yeah. So that would be my second piece, because that's perfect. Often what I'll say to my people I work with is, why don't you start from the place of just asking yourself, what's the most loving thing I could do right now?
Yeah.
Right? Like, if this is really about giving yourself space to be who you are and falling in love with yourself, then start to get familiar with being able to answer the question, what would be the most loving thing I could do right now? It could be to take a nap. It could be to take a drive, like you said, to walk away. It could be to say, hey, this isn't okay with me. But, you know, my experience is that the self really responds to being paid attention to. And it takes very, very, very little to really shift that inner feeling of panic or the inner feeling of I'm not in control here, or, you know, like it's like looking at a little kid and being like, oh, how are you, sweetie? You know, like they just melt into that.
Right.
It takes very little attention for our inner self to respond differently.
Fantastic. Well, I almost feel like, Jay, with Thanksgiving week, actually Thanksgiving, the day that we're recording this, we're only 2 days away from Thanksgiving. This will actually come out after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But then with all of December ahead of us, I think this is kind of the perfect way to sort of end our conversation today.
Good. Yeah. I wish everyone out there listening well as you move through the holidays. I know it is an extra challenging time, and it also does have the potential to be an extra touching, meaningful time. So my best to everyone out there to stay with themselves and feel what they feel, and hope that it's the good stuff.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Jay. This has been wonderful. I know I've gotten so much out of this. And for everyone listening on the podcast, please check out Jay's website. It's jayfields.com. And Jay, anything else, social media or anything else that people can connect with you?
You know what? I try to be true to myself and say that I just really despise social media. So find me. I am on Facebook, but not too much. And I really enjoy having people reach out, email or call if they want to connect. So
excellent.
That's probably the best way. And thank you so much, Travis. I too have really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm excited that we've connected in this way. Look forward to doing so more.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jay. And thanks, everyone, for listening to this week's Yes And podcast. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks.
Hold on.